Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Save up to $450 on a Gibson Les Paul Studio Deluxe, up to $900 on a Gibson Les Paul Trad Pro 4, or save up to 20% on other select Gibson guitars. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, this is Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, we're previewing Cavs-Knicks with Jared Dubin from Locked On Knicks, looking at all angles of tonight's matchup. You know, talked about how the teams have changed since opening night, how the Knicks maybe are a little bit above where they actually are when you look at the standings. They're currently fifth prior to playing the Heat last night. Didn't update the show before then because when we recorded, but they were fifth. Two games above 500, and it should be a really fun night in New York. A couple notes before we get into this. First off, J.R. Smith is going to be out Wednesday. Now, Brian Windhorst reported that Smith's knee injury is not serious, that it's not something to particularly worry about in terms of being an ACL or anything, but he's not going to play. The Cavs announced that officially, and that means that we're probably going to see DeAndre Liggins or someone like that start at shooting guard. Additionally, just want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by BetDSI. Do you love basketball, and are you ready to get into the action? Then you need to check out BetDSI.com. This is a company that has been in the business for over 20 years. They're top-rated, it's safe, and they have really, really quick payouts. And right now, BetDSI.com has a great basketball special. If you sign up today, you're going to get $10 free to try their service. That's $10 free to bet on whenever you want. They also are offering 100% bonus on your first deposit, and you're going to have no problems with BetDSI. Again, fast and easy payment of anything you win. They have great customer service. You can bet on hundreds of football and basketball wagers and bet on things like the UFC. There's the Pettis Holloway card this weekend you can bet on. You can bet on basically anything that you want at BetDSI.com. And if you're someone who wants to bet on things that are happening in real time, you can bet on basketball, football, and other major sporting events as they happen. Anything you want to play at BetDSI, you're probably going to be able to find it. Make sure to go to BetDSI.com right now. That's BetDSI.com. Go there now, use the promo code Cavaliers10, and get your free wager and start winning today. Additionally, don't let 2016 distract you from the fact that the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals. And buy a limited edition 3-1 lead lapel pin and sticker pack from I'm Sorry Mark Jackson, a merch store by Fear the Sword's Daniel Rowell. While you're there, you can also pick up a Doris Burke pin or a Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy sticker. These come in packs. You can buy the pack with the Warriors pin and the sticker, or you can buy the Doris Burke pin and the Mark Jackson sticker. All the proceeds to this go directly to Dan's donut-filled diet and art. So if you go to bit.ly.com/sorrymark and buy Dan's pins, he can buy some donuts, and he'll really appreciate it. It's independent. He's making these himself. He's shipping them himself. Go support Dan. He's a great guy, one of the nicest people I know, and you should go buy his stuff. They're awesome. I have the pin. I have the sticker of the Warriors blue with 3-1 lead. They're awesome, and you should go buy one right now by going to bit.ly.com/sorrymark. Also, if you want to get a mailbag question in, drop those to LockedOnCavs on Twitter or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And without further ado, here's today's show with Jared Dubin.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, Jared, how's it going?
Not too bad, man. How about you?
Not too bad. In the midst of another busy week of NBA basketball, but, you know, that's definitely a good thing. So this is another Locked On Cavs, Locked On Knicks podcast. We're going to look at Cavs-Knicks, I believe round two, and look at how these teams have changed a little bit since they played on opening night when the Cavs drubbed them, to put it kind of nicely. But it's in New York. A lot of sort of interesting things happening with the Cavs, but nothing really that, besides J.R. Smith's injury, that actually impacts the game directly. A lot of it's the Phil Jackson stuff, the Trump Hotel with LeBron and other teammates who we don't know, but but I could guess who aren't going to stay at the Trump Hotel per the Cavs contract with that hotel. But with the Knicks, is it? I mean, what's the state of the Knicks right now?
Well, they as of we're recording this Tuesday afternoon, so before the game against Miami tonight, they are 11-9 and in fifth place in the Eastern Conference. So that's something that's not necessarily expected based on that first game of the season. I think the big difference here is, you know, the first game obviously was on the road. This game is at home. The Knicks are 9-3 at the Garden. So, I mean, and in only one game have they come up and, like, really not shown up, which was against Houston very early on in the season. In every other one of their home games, even the other two losses, they have played well and have made it difficult for the other team coming in. So I think it'll tell us a lot if they are able to give the Cavs an actual game and possibly even beat them. If they come out and get blown off the floor, that tells us a lot too, which is basically like there's another level of teams in the Eastern Conference or in the league that they just can't reach even when they play at home.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the read. I haven't watched a ton of Knicks this year just because there's been other teams that have kind of caught my attention. Like I like the Lakers a lot more than I expected to, for example. It's like I feel like I watch them more than maybe I need to. So I haven't really caught the Knicks much, but you look at where they're at in the East, like you said, it just doesn't, like, they're where they are because they're playing, you know, decently, but it's not exactly like they're blowing away really good teams in order to get to the fifth spot in the East as we record this. Like, being just a little bit ahead of the Pacers, a little bit ahead of a struggling Hawks team, even, like, not that far removed from the Orlando Magic, who are just putrid in so many ways on one side of the ball. Like, it's just, they're there. Are Knicks fans, like, receptive to this? Like, are they, like, good with where the Knicks are at? Or are they, like, upset with it? Or, like, are they skeptical? Like, what's the mood?
Well, it's funny that you put that out there, because I did do a series of Twitter polls from the podcast account yesterday, and one of them was asking about, you know, the Knicks are 11-9 so far. Is that better than you expected, worse than you expected, or as good as you expected? And 53% of people said better, 43% said as good, and 4% says worse. So I think that people are very satisfied so far. I think that they're playing really well. And, you know, based on that 9-3 home record, they definitely are playing well at home. They're 2-6 on the road and have not played well in several of those games. You know, they were competitive in a loss in Detroit. They were competitive in a loss in Toronto. And they've won two road games also. Couple of the other road ones, they've been sort of blown off the floor. Obviously, Cleveland, they were blown out in Washington also. But you look at even the home games. So you mentioned, you know, they're in fifth, but they're not that far ahead of some teams that, you know, aren't that great. And, you know, that's reflected in their point differential. You know, they're minus 2.1 points per game, which is not something you would expect from a number five seed. Mm-hmm. Even in that 9-3 record at home, they're only plus 2.2 points per 100 possessions in home games, which suggests a team that should be like 7-5 or so at home. You know, you flip that and all of a sudden they're 9-11 instead of 11-9. You know, mm-hmm. It's good that they've been able to outperform their point differential, but it also gives you a little bit of a better clue as to maybe they're playing more like a 7-8-9-10 seed than they are like a 5 seed. And that just happens to be where they are because it's early on. You know, that it's, you know, 550 winning percentage on pace for 45 wins. But you look at like the Western Conference and, you know, there are seven teams better than that. You take a 550 winning percentage and you're just ahead of Portland for the eighth spot. You know, the East just happens to have, I think it's nine teams between 9-12 or 12-9. Mm-hmm. And on any given night, depending on the results, you could jumble those teams up in any particular order.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. And I think also when you look at the East, a lot of the teams that the Knicks are around are teams that that at least in two cases I think maybe are underperforming from where I expected. I didn't think the Hawks would necessarily be as good as they've been, but 10-12 is not where I thought they'd be right now. The Pistons, of course, didn't have Reggie Jackson, so there's a big old caveat when we talk about them because Ish Smith is just not providing what Reggie Jackson does, even if I'm not the biggest Reggie Jackson, like, support out there. Like, he does good things for them. I mean, we saw that in his first game back, but, like, they're 11-11. And, right. Like, you know, I mean, the Bulls being 11-9.
I mean, they're, with Detroit, like, their entire offense is based on Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond pick and rolls.
Yeah.
For them to go, I think they were 10-10, or maybe 11-10, without Reggie, again, is like their entire offense. It's really impressive, and that makes me feel really good about where they're going throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah. I think with the East, it's just sort of interesting because, like, I look at how it's sort of shaping out, and I have no, like, it's so early in the season to really talk about, you know, playoffs or anything like that, but I feel like the Knicks, from, like, watching them a little bit and just kind of looking where things stand, I think it'd be honestly one of the more, like, fascinating, like, 1-8 matchups if the Cavs are going to get that way, just because at least you'd have some, there'd be some storylines that are somewhat interesting, but I'd like to see Kristaps getting playoff experience against that type of team, even if it's four games. Like, that has value, and I'd like to see how he would do in that series, because he does provide matchup issues for the Cavs, and especially what we've seen of late with the Cavs, they've struggled against certain bigs. You know, I mean, Rose and Kyrie would be like a what-if kind of thing. Like, Carmelo and LeBron would certainly be fun. And I think there's, like, things the Knicks do that even we saw on opening night in a drubbing that, like, present problems for the Cavs in, like, minor areas, but, like, that to me is more interesting than seeing the Cavs play, like, the Pacers, or to see the Cavs, like, play, like, if the Hornets were to slip that low. Like, there's nothing that interesting there to me.
Yeah, I think it's more interesting on a storyline and conceptual level than it is on an on-court level, like a lot of those Knicks-Heat matchups that happened.
Yeah.
I said, you know, in a podcast before the start of the season, like, you know, one of the questions I got asked in a mailbag was, like, which teams do you think the Knicks match up well with, and which teams do you think they don't match up well with? And rather than identifying specific teams up top, I identified certain archetypes of teams that would be a really bad matchup for them. And when you ticked off each of the areas, the Cavs fit basically every single one of them. You know, they have an attacking point guard that can get into the paint in Kyrie. And you saw that in the first game. I think he had 29 or 31 points, one of the two. And he basically got wherever he wanted on the floor. If you have an athletic center that can make Noah really move his feet and hit them on the offensive boards, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Tristan Thompson in the first game. Even if he didn't even play all that much, it was a problem for them when he did. If they have a perimeter four-man that can force Porzingis to guard on the perimeter, that's an issue for the Knicks. And the Cavs have Kevin Love. If you have, you know, multiple defenders that you can throw at Carmelo, and especially one who, you know, and I've made this point throughout the season, he tends to struggle with guys that are, like, exactly the same size as him that he can't either blow by off the dribble or overpower with his size. And the Cavs have LeBron.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, plus the Knicks don't have anybody that can guard LeBron. Like, their best hope is using Lance Thomas on him. So I think it would definitely be interesting in terms of, like, giving people things to talk about, you know, the LeBron-Carmelo matchup and rivalry, Rose and Irving, that kind of thing, J.R. Smith and Shumpert against the Knicks and all the Phil Jackson nonsense, Porzingis' first playoff series. I do think that it would be a really, really bad matchup for the Knicks and probably a quick series. You know, the Cavs might give them a game just because they tend to do that kind of thing sometimes, but the Knicks really have to avoid being that 8 seed if they do get into the playoffs so they can have a shot at winning a round.
Yeah, but I will say this to look at tomorrow even more specifically. I think the Knicks are sort of the perfect team for the Cavs to get an idea what life would be like without J.R. Smith in the rotation. And I say that because obviously if you're listening to the show, you may know already that J.R. Smith's injury that he suffered against the Raptors isn't serious. It doesn't look like there's any major structural damage or anything that's going to keep him out for a long period of time. But I would not expect him to play. We don't know for sure yet. But, I mean, he was in Cleveland. There's not really a need to play him. And I think, Jared, I mean, you would agree with that, right? Like, there's no need to play JR.
Not at all.
Like this. Yeah.
There's no need to play him until he's 1,000% healthy. Like, there's nothing that's going to happen to the Cavs in the next 3 or 4 weeks, even if it takes that long for him to recover, that's going to knock them off their perch as, like, the most likely team to make the finals. Like, even if they don't get the number one seed, there's no reason to think they're not going to be the team that goes there.
Yeah, and keeping JR away from New York is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, just let him, know, like,
maybe
chill
he still
in Cleveland.
Comes, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, he might. Who knows? But I think you look at tomorrow, I would guess that actually Shumpert's not going to step in and start for a mid-shooting guard. I think You probably see, I think there's a chance you see DeAndre Liggins. I think there's a chance you see Richard Jefferson. I think one of those two guys makes the most sense. Liggins was the guy that Lou went to start the second half against the Raptors, and I think it was because he, A, didn't want to disrupt Shumpert's flow, but he wanted to keep Jefferson in his role as well, and Liggins is a guy I think they like to an extent. And I don't think Jordan McRae's exactly impressed anyone this year besides the 1 fourth quarter he closed out, but and that was just like byproduct of Kyrie and Love not playing well and LeBron really carrying a unit, but you know, narratives, man. But I mean,
shot that it's Mike Dunleavy. He did come back and play a couple minutes.
He's just been so bad.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't necessarily like know what it is. I don't know if it's his back. He's kind of downplayed his back injury a little bit. I don't know if it's he's adjusting to teammates in the situation. I don't know if he's just he got old. Or if, like, you know, not playing that many games last year is the issue, but I kind of think maybe he's the guy I would start, but I don't know if the Cavs think that, because I think if you're playing with LeBron and Kyrie and Love, you're going to, A, force him to play with those guys for 20 minutes for maybe the first time all year, but you're going to allow him to be the fourth shooter instead of, like, the second or third like they've had him be, and he can maybe, if he gets a couple clean threes, if whoever's guarding him sags off, like, maybe that helps him, but I kind of get the feeling it's somebody else.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, you could think about it either way, really.
Yeah, but I think with the Cavs' depth, I think the reason I'm kind of hoping just functionally JR doesn't play is because I think this is a test of the Cavs' depth. I'm not someone that like thinks the Cavs actually necessarily need to do something, but if you look at without JR, they lose their most maybe their most important floor spacer outside of Love and Kyrie. And he certainly has been good on defense since he's been with the Cavs. Even though he's not shooting well this year, has played really well this year. He's important. If Dunleavy's not playing well, and I don't really think Liggins or McRae are actually any good. Like they're fine. They're whatever. Without JR, you kind of get an idea of what the Cavs would look like if they had an injury to someone on the wing. And you know, Shumpert has an injury history. Jefferson is an older guy and could fall off. You just don't always know what's going to happen. So I wonder kind of how they approach this. And it's a one-game sample. It's not going to mean much. But I kind of just want to see how Ty Lue adjusts to it. And to me, that would be the most interesting thing kind of at this game. I mean, there's so many other things that would be fun. But this, to me, is maybe the most important thing we could grab from this if you're looking at this from the Cleveland side of things.
And I think it'll be an interesting way to see how the Knicks respond defensively, too. Because the biggest issue they had in that first game was that they kept leaving the Cavs open from beyond the arc. JR especially, he did not connect very often. I think he was something like he took like 8 or 9 threes and made maybe 1 or 2. And then early on, I remember there was one particular play, one of the threes that JR actually made. LeBron gave him a pass and like scolded Justin Holiday for straying too far off JR. So without that shooter out there, it'll be interesting to see, you know, who the Knicks stray away from, who they stay close to, because I think they'd be much more okay with leaving Liggins or Shumpert or Jefferson open from the perimeter than they would have or should have been leaving JR. So you may be able to devote an extra defender or a half a defender, you know, his attention towards LeBron or Kyrie's drives and clean some things up. That did not work well for them defensively in that first matchup.
Yeah, and then I think if you can do something like that and maybe not have to pay as much attention to that shooter, I think clogging the lane for Kyrie and LeBron is a win. I mean, if you can do that and you can really make Kyrie's life uncomfortable when he and LeBron run the pick and roll, or if LeBron has to go through three guys and, you know, has to throw up a dumb shot, like, that's going to matter. That can muck up the game. That can take some of the life out of the Cavs. And it takes some of the pressure off of, you know, Joakim or Kristaps to really protect the rim. Because you don't want to leave those guys isolated either. You don't want Kyrie and LeBron to have free run to just drive off pick and rolls. If you can clog the lane a little bit, yes, you're asking LeBron to do something he does really well and pass the ball to open shooters. But if it's Kyrie, he's not exactly great at it. He's averaging less assists. He had 7 last against Toronto, but also had 6 turnovers, and he's not exactly great at driving and making that kick out read. Like, he's okay at it, but he doesn't have that elite vision on those type of plays. He mostly looks to score, and if you get Kyrie settling for mid-range shots or making a bad pass, that's a win if you're the Knicks, I think.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, they've only sparingly been able to do with opposing point guards that play like Kyrie. Like, they did it pretty well with Damian Lillard and then Kemba Walker in a couple games, but they've also let guys like, you know, Kyrie early and John Wall really tear them apart by getting all the way deep into the paint and either scoring at the basket or finding guys with assists. John Wall had something like 11 or 12 assists and could have had several more if guys didn't blow easy layups. And then obviously Kyrie, like I said earlier, basically got wherever he wanted on the court and made a bunch of ridiculous shots as well. So that's something that will test their defense, obviously, in the direct respect, but how they respond to it and whether they, you know, sort of escort him to the paint as they did in that first game, whether they make him do something that is not necessarily his first choice, will be a good test of how they've learned from that first game.
Yeah, I think that's certainly worth noting. I think the other thing I want to ask you about this is there anything that surprised you about the Knicks so far? You know, we've actually had time to watch these teams. Is there anything about the Knicks that you're like, oh, I didn't expect that, in a positive or negative way?
One positive, one negative. I would say Rose's finishing at the rim has been better than I expected. The last 4 years, he has been really bad finishing at the rim, and this year he's been like even better than during his MVP season, which I'm not sure it's sustainable, but it's certainly been a pleasant surprise so far. And then the one bad thing would be, or I guess it's a combination of bad things that both fall under the same umbrella. Carmelo's defense and Joakim Noah's defense have both been really, really disappointing. Carmelo has been straight up really bad on defense, and Noah has not been nearly as good as he has been, even over the last few years, in his somewhat diminished state. Has there anything that applies to that for you from the Cavs side?
Yeah, I think the thing that surprised me is how good Kevin Love has been.
He's been awesome.
Like, he's been the second best player in the team. Like, and I don't think that's really a question. I think he's an all-star right now. Like, I think very clearly he should be an all-star based on the season he's having. He's basically getting a double-double every night. He looks just so much happier, and he's shooting, you know, over 40% from three so far, which has been huge. And I think some people expected his scoring numbers to go back down from where they were at last year when he was at 16 points. He's up at 21.4.
Yep.
And he's just been so efficient. You know, his usage rate is the highest it's been in Cleveland. It's at 26.5. It's the closest it's been to Minnesota Kevin Love that we've seen, and he just looks happier. Just talking to him, he doesn't seem quite as annoyed anymore. His body language has been great, and he's just been really good. And I mean, some of that I think is because, like we talked about when we did the preview for the first game of the year, he's unburdened by that title. But I think they're just using him in really good ways. I think they're still going away from him at times. I mean, the Blazers game that I'm sure you saw, where he scored 37 points in a quarter or whatever. He scored like 4 points in the second half or something like that.
Right.
Like, they just went away from him. And they do that still. And that's something, like against Toronto, I want them to keep feeding
him. He had 34 in that quarter.
Right, 34 in the quarter.
And 40 for the game.
Right. So he just disappears after that. It's not really his fault. I was at that game, and they really were just not really feeding him very much after that. And then, like, you look at the Toronto game, he played really, really well. And he has such a positional advantage over a guy like Siakam. And even over to Patrick Patterson, because they're okay, and Siakam plays really hard, but Love pump fakes him to death. And you need to maximize that more, I think. And on the flip side of something negative, we talked about him already, but Dunleavy has just been not good. And, like, you know, he had the concussion.
But he's also not playing much, and that's a chicken and egg situation. Like, is he not playing much because he's not been good? Has he not been good because he's not playing much? But at least you have the kind of roster where if a guy's really not playing well at all, you can say, okay, we're sitting down.
Yeah.
For the Knicks, for example, like if Rose was not playing well at all, they would not be able to just say, we're not going to play him.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, Dunleavy is playing 15 minutes a game this year. That would be his lowest total since 2002-2003 when he was a 22-year-old playing for the Warriors, and he played 15.9 minutes a game.
That was, what, his second year in the league, right?
Yeah, I believe that was his second year in the league.
And look, Kevin Love, that's something, you know, that first game when we talked the next day, he didn't shoot well in that game, but we both were like, he was way more involved, and he looked way better. He was all over the glass getting, like, every rebound. So that was something that was noticeable right from the first game, was that he was going to be more intimately involved in everything. And that was good to see. Excuse me, good to see then, and it's good to see that that's continued.
Mm-hmm. It's been really fun to see. They've been certainly better for it. I think earlier in the year, I was kind of thinking Kyrie was going to take this bigger role, and I think he has, and he's definitely taking more threes, which is, I think, the biggest difference. But I think Love has just been used in a way that it's the closest thing we will ever see to Minnesota Kevin Love in Cleveland. You can just because when you have LeBron and you have Kyrie and you're playing a style of basketball, you're doing isolation. And I know I've said this on Locked On Cavs before. You can never use Kevin Love likely in the way that he was used with the Wolves. He's not going to get a bajillion elbow touches and post touches and like be the hub of everything. But in spurts, you can. And you can use him to set other guys up better, and it works really, really well. I'm really intrigued to see how it's going to work against the Warriors, because I have no idea. But I think it's been really good for them, and I think it's made them better than they were last year, even if some of the other things, like JR, like Dunleavy, haven't worked out. And, I mean, the other caveat, and Knicks fans, I'm sure, have seen his stats at least. Amon Shumpert's been just kind of amazing. And it's really bizarre. Yeah. And it's really bizarre. And it's not going to last, I can't imagine, but it's been a fun ride so far.
Yeah, when was the last time Shump missed?
It's a fair question, because it's like I can't think of
he's like shooting, what, like 44% from three or something like that.
Yeah, I'm looking at them now, but he was, you know, above 50% at one point, which is like crazy. Right now he's shooting 41.9% from three, shooting 48% from the field, and that's on 2.4 3-point attempts per game. For reference, last year he was at 29.5%. He was just awful last year.
Yeah, he was hurt pretty much all year.
Yeah.
Last season, even the season before that, he was hurt for a lot of the year.
Yeah, he came when he got to the Cavs. He was hurt.
Yeah, I mean, he's been hurt on and off for the last probably 3 years. The last time he was really healthy was like the second half of that. That 2012-13 season when the Knicks were really good and he first came back from his ACL tear. I mean, because he got hurt again in the playoffs that year. And since then, he's been banged up on and off basically every season.
Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff he's doing isn't even stuff that's particularly amazing. He'll just catch a three or catch a pass in the corner from LeBron and he'll pop off a three really quick. And he makes it. His stroke looks good. He makes it pretty often, and he just looks confident. The last couple of years, we've seen him take some bad shots, and I know as you've seen Shumpert when he shoots, and you have at least somewhat of an investment or just a necessary reason to watch it. When he pulls up for a jumper, sometimes I cringe. Even now, like I cringe a little bit. And
I've been saying since probably 2011 that he should be legally barred from taking shots off the dribble.
He still does it, and when he does it and it goes in, it's kind of like a very surprising, kind of amazing thing.
Yeah,
it's crazy that he's been good on defense and not like being a terrible backup point guard. So it's like I don't even know what to make of how good he's been. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see how quickly they get him in there, because the way Rose has been playing over the last 10 games or so, I think they're going to want Shumpert on him for a lot of the night.
Yeah, I he's not going to start, I don't think, but he'll be in there. If something goes wrong, Tyronn Lue is not a guy who has these very rigid rotations, at least not yet. We're starting to see some basic patterns, but if DeAndre Liggins starts for Saint, turns the ball over twice in 5 minutes, you're going to see him on Shumpert, and you probably see him more than the 20-minute game you're already seeing him anyway.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see also... because, again, I think Tristan is a fairly bad matchup for the Knicks. And I will be interested to see if Hornacek will make the first move and go small and force Tristan to guard Porzingis and Love to guard Carmelo, or, you know, make Love guard somebody like, you know, Courtney Lee or Lance Thomas or something like that on the perimeter. Just to see what happens. Like, if they get Lance out there, they could put him on LeBron and have Carmelo guard Love instead, which is obviously an easier matchup for him. And then you get Kristaps on Tristan, so he's near the basket more often just based on Tristan rolling all the way to the rim rather than having to guard Love on the perimeter. Going small isn't necessarily the way to beat the Cavs, but I think it might be better for the Knicks because this does not seem like the kind of matchup where Noah is going to be a huge positive for them, especially if he plays defense the way he's been for most of the season rather than the way he has for most of his career.
Yeah, and I think the Kristaps thing's worth noting because Thompson has struggled this year and in the past against very big centers. Kristaps, you know, isn't necessarily like a DeAndre or anything, but he's tall. He is stronger than he was last year, and we've seen the putback dunks. He's got skills on that area of the game. And I think if you look at how to beat the Cavs in that, and with their small lineups, I think that's a way to do it. I think that, and especially because if you get Thompson off the floor, Channing Frye or Kevin Love ends up at center in that scenario. Love is a good rebounder, but Channing Frye is not really a good rebounder. He's a good shooter, obviously. He really spaces the floor, and he's been great for the Cavs. But if you have a way to limit the Cavs' rebounding, it's getting Frye on the floor. And if you can defend him and not lose him, like a lot of teams just have, that I think that's a win in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I actually would be interested to see if they wind up going to Frye as like a JR replacement. So you get the shooting, especially if the Knicks stay big, you know, you could stick him on Noah and be okay with that. That's an interesting move.
Yeah, get a little weird.
Yeah.
And just kind of see what happens. I mean, you could probably, I could see them maybe doing it in a stretch. They'd be really big in certain aspects if they did that. And I think you definitely would have to hope that it doesn't go badly really fast. Like, I think if you survive the first couple minutes, maybe then it's, like, a little bit more worth doing. But I kind of would like to see, just in terms of, like, I would like to see weird stuff and, like, interesting stuff when I'm watching this game.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the Knicks are the type of team that you need to break out that possibility against. Like, although it could work as something like, we're just going to test this out and it's not that dangerous against this team, like, because we're not worried about Courtney Lee killing Kevin Love.
Right.
You know, and it's just something where they could see if it might work against somebody else. I don't really expect to see it, but it would be an interesting maneuver.
Yeah, Lou does some stuff sometimes that I'm a little surprised by. So, having not talked to him after the game or anything, I could see him doing something kind of wacky like that.
Yeah, I mean, look, it should be fun. I think it should be a much more competitive game than the opener. You know, first of all, it's in New York. Second of all, it's not ring night for the Cavs.
Yeah.
So, and plus, the guys are just playing better. Like, Kristaps is playing much better last two games accepted. Rose is playing much better than he was early on in the season. And that's obviously, you know, two of the Knicks' three most important players on offense, at least. So I would think that it'll be a better game this time around. I think you got to still consider the Cavs pretty heavy favorites, but I think the Knicks will give them a game.
Yeah. And last thing, let's maybe wrap it up on this. Do you expect LeBron and Phil to
no, to
dab it all? I don't either. I don't expect LeBron, if he sees him, just to even get close to Phil.
Yeah, LeBron, I think, already answered that question today, that he won't talk to Phil.
Yeah, he said no pretty plainly last night. But sometimes I think we've seen that stuff where, like, if it just happens, you know, it becomes a thing. And I wonder, like, what Melo really thinks of that, like, deep down. I don't know. I think it's just such a fascinating, like, micro thing that doesn't have any, like, actual implication on what's going to happen in the game. But, like, that dynamic of someone who was so important for the Lakers and still runs a team and everything, and then LeBron with Carmelo as being like the intermediary, it's like such like a weird little kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, LeBron always comes out and puts on a show in the Garden anyway. He's probably like the best road player in the Garden since Jordan, which is probably true of every arena. But I would expect that he'll put on maybe something a little more special, being that this is the first time that he has a chance to really stick it to him.
Yeah, throw a little bit of shade in his post-game availability, too.
Yeah, I would expect that as well.
Yeah. All right, so.
All right, so we'll talk tomorrow to wrap things up, I guess.
Yes, sir. All right, yeah, so listeners, we'll be back tomorrow, another crossover recap the game. So for Chris, for Jared, we'll talk to you then.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.